This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, a look at the growing number of stay-at-home dads. But first, change can be hard. What's true on the personal level is especially true at the business level, where 70% of efforts to change fail. Authors Lisa Hillenbrand and Ellen Oster say change is one of the most critical and one of the most difficult challenges businesses face. Their new book, Stragility, Excelling at Strategic Changes, offers advice to business leaders at all levels for navigating a constantly changing world. Lisa Hillenbrand, who served as Global Marketing Director for Procter & Gamble, joins us to explain what Stragility is and why it's crucial to achieving changes in your organization. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Lisa, good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Hey, Mark. It's great to be here.
Yeah, start off by explaining, because it's an interesting word, stragility. What is that?
Yes. Stragility is our word for strategic, agile, people-powered change. And the word came up by accident initially because my co-author, Ellen Oster, was trying to Google strategic agility and typed stragility instead. And we thought it was a great encapsulation of at least two of the skills needed for successful change. A change has to be on strategy, it needs to be agile, and it needs to be, most importantly, people-powered. So that's stragility.
So stragility was kind of an accident that
it was an accident. It was a fortuitous accident.
Now, change has always been a factor for businesses, Lisa. How is it different today from what businesses, say, 30 or 40 years ago would have faced?
The pace of change today, Mark, is unrelenting, and the pressures businesses face, the tough economy, the globalization means that we are all hit with multiple changes. So in our view, the ability to change or change management is probably the most important competitive advantage that people can have today. And we believe that the ability to change or stragility is a learned change. There are a set of skills that you can become better at and you can practice and you can use them on any change. And they're applicable whether you're in a small organization or a big organization, a nonprofit or a public, whether you're trying to do change in the social sector or et cetera, widely applicable.
Well, and how much does technology contribute to the constant change that we see?
Well, certainly the amount of technology change. Think Netflix versus Blockbuster. Blockbuster was too married to a store concept and went out of business, whereas Netflix figured out where the puck was going and has a thriving business.
So if companies are aware of all this change out there and that things are constantly changing and that they need to change to keep up with everything, why are so many efforts to change failing? I think the statistic was 70% that you use.
It is, and that's tragic. And I think part of the reason is that people don't take the time to learn change management skills. There really are learned things you can do for sensing and shifting strategy, for embracing politics, for inspiring and engaging people, and for keeping a change-fit organization so you avoid change burnout.
Now, what are some of the companies that you would say are good role models that have done a really good job of implementing change and adapting to change?
You know, it depends upon which of the change skills you're talking about. Right here in Cincinnati, our first change skill is called sense and shift, and it's about not locking and loading on strategy and then walking and putting it in a drawer and walking away from it. And one of the stellar examples of a company who's done that is Macy's. Terry Lundgren, their CEO, when he initially came in, they had scaled their operations, and as a result, they got economies of scale, but they were out of touch with local consumers. And what they found is a consumer in Miami had very different needs than a consumer in New York. So in Miami, brighter colors. In New York, lots of black. And what he did is tailor his program. He sensed and shifted strategy to tailor for local tastes, to become much more omni-channel. So somebody can look online and then they can go in store and purchase. They can return it anywhere. And through all of that, he talked about magic selling, really welcoming the customer back through a variety of mediums. So they have continued to thrive year after year after year by really embracing this notion of sensing and shifting strategy.
So Macy's is a good example. Any other role models that come to mind?
Oh, well, there are many companies, as I say, for different pieces of it, but I think they're a good example.
Is it true that the larger the company, Lisa, the more difficult it is for them to successfully change, or does a lot of the ability to change depend on management?
I think it probably is harder the bigger the company is, because you simply have more layers and more people involved. The steps are the same. You really need to think about how you engage people, how you figure out what's working and what's not working. Often people look at a change and they say, oh, I'm just going to diagnose what's not working and change that. And they really need to think about what's working well and how do we need to change it.
So how does it differ? Because there are a lot of other ways to manage change. There are a lot of other approaches to doing this. So when you and Ellen wrote the book, what were you thinking was different about your approach from all the other approaches?
I'd say our approach is a more comprehensive model dealing with all aspects of change rather than one piece. There are a number of books who zero in on pieces of it, but we really give you a framework. The other thing is we've got diagnostic questions. We've got exercises in each chapter. We have the ability to do workshops, keynotes. A lot of this is about practice, as I say, and so we give you a lot of ways to practice the skills.
So you were talking earlier about harnessing the power of your people and using them in implementing change. So what kind of groundwork should leaders do? What should they start out with to inspire and engage their people in implementing change?
Sure. The first thing to do is to really understand what people are thinking, what's working, as I say, what's not working, and then look at that and enroll people in what needs to change. One of the aspects that really gets people in trouble is the politics. People say, oh gosh, I don't want to deal with politics. That's so scary. And what we recommend people do is instead understand the politics, map the political landscape, figure out who key influencers are, and then engage those people, figure out who the influencers are. A great example of that is KFC. David Novak was the brand new CEO of KFC, and the franchisees were furious. Business results were bad. Their profit was lousy. The new guy's coming in, and they are mad. And he did classic political skills to turn that around. He started by reminding them all of the shared mission of why they were all in business, to serve people and deliver delicious food, etc. Then he listened to people's frustrations and let them vent a bit. And then what he did was so clever. He said, I want you all to break out into small groups, all these franchisees, it was a national meeting, and I want you to imagine you are me. And take some time and come back with a recommendation for what you change at KFC. And they came back with three things. They said, we need to improve the quality of the food, we need to launch new menu items, and we need to improve our training program. And just like that, they went from me angry to we, and that's exactly what they did. And the business turned around, and they went on. They had a huge growth trajectory after that. So it's a great example of how you engage and embrace the politics rather than running away from them. He wasn't defensive. He listened. He built from what was working, and he really enrolled them in creating the change. Chances are, if he had just taken his top people and gone away and done a retreat, they would have come back with similar things. But because he engaged the franchisees and because these were their ideas, they were so much more powerful. And of course, the franchisees then had an even greater vested interest in making them work.
Is there ever a time where you would want to stay away from the office politics, though, or is that a mistake?
I think it's nearly always a mistake to kind of put your head in the sand, to look away from it, because what ends up happening is that the politics come back to bite you later. We have a saying that is, go slow to go fast, and the go slow is about the people part. It's really engaging with people. It's asking for ideas and input. It's really trying to engage. It's working through the concerns. And one of the surprising things we discovered is people often say, oh, well, I'm going to stay away from the skeptics. If they're not behind this idea, I don't want to pay attention to them. And what we found is the skeptics actually can be absolutely key to making the change work, because these are people often who want it to work, but they see flaws and they'd like you to address the flaws. Well, that's a huge gift. And by engaging skeptics and addressing those flaws and getting them behind it, often they become huge supporters and the change goes through faster from having done that groundwork up front.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join me in the conversation with Lisa Hillenbrand about the book Stragility. This is Cincinnati Edition. And Lisa, is the book directed at upper management, or can anyone at any level in a company benefit from what is in this book?
Anybody, any level can apply the same principles. Your scope of influence is different. If you're the CEO, you have a larger scope of influence than if you're managing a frontline team, but it's exactly the same principles.
Now, can someone in mid or lower management in a position like that, can they approach upper management about the need to make strategic change? How do they do this? That could be kind of tough to go to your boss with, wait a minute, I think we need to change these things.
Yes. There, it's all about managing up. And we highly recommend in any change that you find some people higher than you to become sponsors, because these are people who will help you eliminate roadblocks and who also have a vested interest in the change. And then you find promoters, people who are positive about the change, and you use those people to help. But If people face the hard cost of not succeeding, it's actually not a huge tough sell to say to somebody higher than you, we need to do this right. We need to absolutely take the time. Often I think the problem is we get so rushed and we get very time driven that has to be done and has to be done now. Which is true. There's a sense of urgency in business, but taking the time to really engage and do the proper footwork, if you will.
We will continue our conversation about Stragility and dealing with change, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon is Lisa Hillenbrand, co-author of Stragility, Excelling at Strategic Changes. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Lisa, we're talking about all the different skills you need to pull this off. You were talking about the KFC example, where he avoided the temptation to just tell them what they were going to do and then try to sell them on the idea. Instead, he got them engaged. Talk about that particular skill.
Sure. We are so tempted, when we've spent months working on a change, we're tempted to just tell people, all right, here's what we need to do, and here's how we need to do it. And when you do that, what happens is you often get people walking but not really committed, or you get passive resistance. And we believe that you really need to inspire, engage people with a compelling case for change, with a mantra, with a built shared ownership, fleshing the change out so it really pertains to each individual level and what people need to do at their level. So, for example, in the book, we talk about a global port. And this port was losing business to a number of other ports and realized they needed to have a new competitive advantage. And they decided they would be the easiest port to do business with. If you can imagine, either a cruise ship or a freight ship comes in and they need to be able to turn around very quickly because time is money and move things along. So they decided they'd be the easiest port to do business with. And what they did is create a mantra called smooth sailing. Everybody needed to think about how their job would contribute to smooth sailing. And you asked about different levels. As they rolled this out, they talked to each individual group, and they got to the parking lot attendants. You might think, well, a parking lot attendant, what could they do? And it turned out one of the parking lot attendants raised his hand, and he said, you know, I can be the first step to welcoming these people on their vacation. And if I could get some carts, I could really help, particularly people who have kids and stuff. And if we put a playroom into the waiting room, that would really help. By the same token, the people who did the paperwork realized they created a really clever way. Instead of waiting for the ship to come in, getting the paperwork, processing it, and turning it around, they actually got a helicopter, flew the helicopter to the ship, got the paperwork turned around, and brought it back. It's a wonderful example of how you inspire and engage people and get people thinking of things you never would have thought of if it had been command and control and tell and sell.
Well, I guess the key thing, at least to me, it seems that if you inspire and engage as opposed to telling and selling, that you're giving your employees a sense of ownership. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you're getting them to really think about what they need to do to deliver it. And so what all these people needed to do, and it was different by level, because otherwise what often happens is there's a lofty goal and people say, okay, the goal is volume up this much and profit up that much. No clue what that means. I'm in logistics. I'm going to keep stamping my pieces of paper, you know, so.
513-419-7100 to join us. And Robert in Loveland. Good afternoon, Robert.
Hi, I'm concerned about climate change, and that's a long-term problem. I'm wondering if Strigility has anything to offer, because it seems to still be predicated on concerns about short-term profits and a consumer economy.
Okay, so you're wondering how it can be used to change attitudes and, okay.
Interesting. Actually, we have one story in the book that very much pertains, and this is one of the things Mark said earlier and what you said is that what happens if you're not a CEO, et cetera. In this case, you know the old saying, no man is an island. There was an island in Denmark called Samsø. And there was a guy whose job it was to create the world's first 100% renewable energy island. His name was Søren Hermansen. And what happened is he went around and talked to people, and people said, oh, this is some pie-in-the-sky project from Copenhagen. This is not something that's for farmers and plumbers and real people. So, and with something like climate change, the issue is a lot of skeptics. People don't know what to do. So what he did was a great example of inspiring engaging that we just talked about, and about the politics and really embracing the politics. He had what he called Coffee and Beer Connects, where he went with each group to discover the what's in it for me. So, for example, farmers were very concerned with mandates for changes in farming practice, and they identified together something called elephant grass that's used as biomass in heating units. So they had a new crop. Plumbers were trained in how to service the new heat pumps. The residents got tax credits. Even the golf course got into the program. You know, golf courses are notoriously not good for the climate. Instead of all those fertilizers, they used sheep, and they put little things to fix divots in all of the carts. So everybody got into the action. They still have a golf course, but it's very green. So it was all about identifying tangible benefits. And they, by the way, they became the first energy, 100% renewable energy island. And our friend Søren, it now runs something called the Samsø Energy Academy, and he's teaching people all over the world these same skills. So it's a great example of you can take something like climate change and you can use Strigility skills for it.
Are there certain warning signs, though, when you're trying to implement change, things you should be looking for that warn you that, boy, we're off track?
Sure. Sometimes people don't understand the strategy. Sometimes the strategy is clear and nothing is happening. Often you see people doing the blame game. Well, I'd change if his department changed it, or if she did something different, I would change. So all of those things are signs that you're probably derailing. And it's interesting. It may feel slow to really engage people, but we find that taking the time to doing that is a lot easier than redoing it when you've already launched the change and it's not working, and you're one of those, sadly, those 70% where it's failing.
Hmm. Is it possible to encounter change fatigue?
Oh, sure. Change fatigue is epidemic these days. We are all trying to do too much, personally and professionally. And it's interesting. Our number one piece of advice is to change less and accomplish more. And we all have these enormous to-do lists. And before we know it, the good projects are choking out the really blockbuster ones, like weeds in a garden, that you really do need to weed things out. And my two inspirational examples for that. One is when Steve Jobs came back to Apple. He was reviewing projects one at a time, and there were thousands of them. And finally, he said, I've had enough. And he focused the whole company on two, what became the Macintosh and what became the iPhone. And if you think if Apple could do that, we could do that. Google has what they call the Google graveyard. And every year, things go into the Google graveyard. So they had a technology called Bump, where you push two Android things together and you shared information. It didn't work well. And Bump is now in the graveyard. So that's a great example of how you avoid change fatigue. Other ideas, testing and prototyping. One bank arrogantly decided they were going to change systems over a short weekend, and did it. It didn't work. Customers were unable to access for a long period of time, and it was a crisis. Another bank ran tests, did it over a long weekend, and it went smoothly. So that's about running water through the pipes.
So what's the one thing you would tell a business leader to do, the first step they should take if they want to put Strigility into action?
It's really engaging people. Ultimately, all change comes down to people. All change is people. It's people doing things differently. So to me, it's go slow to go fast, really engage with people, and engage not just on a shallow level, really understand, and understand two things, both what's not working, but as importantly, what is working that you don't want to screw up when you do a change.
Lisa, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Lisa Hillenbrand, she's co-author of Strugility, Excelling at Strategic Changes. And coming up, we'll discuss stay-at-home dads and how society's perception of them has changed. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.